soft open with a hard start. The Mojo Rating Report with Sam Cedar. The Mojo Rating Report with Sam Cedar.
A soft open to a hard start. A hard start with a soft center. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. You've interneted to the internet of the internets. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Tom Cheevers is freaking me out. Leave it to Cheevers.com. Folks, we're still in our soft launch, as it were. And so we're dealing with all sorts of... Now, you got to turn down your mic, I think, because I'm hearing too much of like what's going on over there. Yeah. We're still in our soft launch. I can't tell you. 45 minutes ago, we had no computers that were working here. Dorsey was running around looking for cables to record video. We're going to have such a complete offering of every form of media possible.
Print.
We're actually ultimately what we're trying to gear up for. By the time we're at hard launch, we want to deliver this entire product in the form of a flyer, a paper flyer that will be black on. We are still deciding what color paper we're going to print it on. Maybe like peach colored, and it's going to have all the transcript of what I'm doing, and we're going to mail it to you. But we have to go through this whole process of trying to make it digital first, and then have it come out. And the other end, it's just gonna be a flyer, and so that will be. Hopefully, you'll enjoy that. I was on. I did Countdown last night. Did any of you guys see it? Dorsey, did you see it? No, too busy.
Could not record it either.
Right, could not record it. Okay, and. Evan, did you see it?
I don't own a TV.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
What? You don't own a TV?
No, I'm going to get fired right now, aren't I?
What do you mean you don't own a TV?
I have the internet.
You have the internet?
Yeah,
but
I have to wait about 12 hours to see whatever I want to see.
That is going to seriously inhibit... One of the things I specifically asked Evan when we started is like, you got to help me a little bit with pop culture. You don't have a TV.
I'm on a 12-hour time lag with pop culture.
12 hours? What are you talking about? Man.
I'm on Twitter.
You can get somebody on the show who watches Survivor. Dorsey, do you watch Survivor?
I used to.
You used to? Okay, good. Great. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun office. No TV. Nothing.
Flyers.
I was on a Countdown last night, and I didn't find out until late. And, it also turns out that they found bed bugs in Mila's school. So, guys, be prepared to fumigate your houses, because I'm probably transmitting them right now as we speak. So all this is spinning around in my head. I get a call to do Olbermann, and it doesn't occur to me until significantly later, as I'm going up to pick up my daughter, like, hey, wait a second. Today's not – he's not back on air. He's still suspended. I mean, I knew it didn't go till Tuesday. I know today is Tuesday, but I didn't know that yesterday. I didn't know yesterday was Monday. And so – I was a little bit concerned because I didn't want to be non-supportive. But I was told me that it's okay because he's coming back already. The issue's been resolved. When I got there, I saw all his regulars there. So I was going to say something up front, but then I thought it would be, I don't know what to do in these situations. I talked about yesterday how I was in that situation with Randy, and even after asking her if I could go on, I think she was not terribly pleased. But I think it had to do with the fact that I didn't say that her joke was funny enough or something. I'm not quite 100% sure on that. But be that as it may, George Bush was on the television program last night, on the television, not program, but on the TV. which you wouldn't know, Evan, because you don't own a TV. And frankly, I could give a shit. The only value to me to for George Bush at this point is either to be put in one of those, what are these things?
Stocks?
Stocks, yeah, in the public yard as a warning to future politicians that you cannot lie with impunity to the American public to bring them to send them into an illegal war. And short of that, I'm not terribly interested in hearing from him or about him unless the Democrats had been smart enough to talk about him before the election. I mean, the notion that that George Bush was still not an issue in this election was a massive, massive failure of politics by the Democrats. I mean, when we went on air at Air America in 2004, for the next 2 years, every conservative would call in. Clinton, 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 Clinton. I don't know if I still have that on my 360. It was crazy. No, that's not it. I think maybe we got rid of it at one point. It just got so sick. Clinton, 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 Clinton. And so George Bush is there. He's admitting the one, let's play the one clip that I think is going to be my favorite clip. Because if there is any justice in this world, Bush will get arrested in some foreign country. The best argument for the impending Chinese takeover of America, according to my right-wing friends, and the soon-to-be-released Red Dawn. Dorsey, do you know when that's coming out?
No, I don't.
Evan, do you even know what do you know what Red Dawn is?
Is it on TV?
Oh, God. I mean, as isolated as I am from pop culture, it's like I've just brought in insulation. You guys are like lead walls. Red Dawn is the remake where apparently China will be taking over the country. If you get to turn down your mic if you're going to play with that Velcro. Play this clip.
Let's talk about waterboarding.
Okay.
Yeah.
We believe America's going to be attacked again.
Right.
There's all kinds of intelligence coming in.
Yeah.
And one of the high-valued Al-Qaeda operatives was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Now, do you know, understand what I'm saying? Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
He's got information. I said, find out what he knows.
I know.
And so I said to our team, are the techniques legal? And a legal team says, yes, they are. I said, use them.
Why is waterboarding legal, in your opinion?
I said to my legal team, are these techniques legal? See, they're the legal team. So that's why I would ask them that legal question. Are these techniques, is this torture, is it legal? Is it legal torture? Because you see, nothing was important except for to get this information. And then I decided to ask the legal team. See, torture.
Because the lawyer said it was legal. It said it did not fall within the Anti-Torture Act. I'm not a lawyer. But you got to trust the judgment of people around you, and I do.
You say it's legal, and the lawyers told me.
Yeah.
Critics say that you got the Justice Department.
Pause for 1 second. I just want to say that I also, in retrospect, after I robbed that bank, I realized I got a bad lawyer. Because I say I'm not a lawyer. I asked him, could I rob that bank? He said yes. So now, retrospect, we can all have hindsight, but he was a bad lawyer. See? So, buy my book.
Give you the legal guidance and the legal memos that you wanted. Tom Kaine, who was the former Republican co-chair of the 9/11 Commission, said they got legal opinions they wanted from their own people.
He obviously doesn't know. I hope Mr. Cain reads the book. That's why I've written the book. He can.
Yes, now hold on for a second. Everybody who thinks you know something different that may or may not make me eligible to go to prison in various places, I suggest you read my book, which will tell you that I should not be going to prison. My book makes it absolutely 100% crystal clear that anything that one might say is bad about me is wrong. In fact, if you look at chapter 1, entitled "Anything You Think That I Did Illegal Was Actually Legal," that's chapter 1. I suggest anybody who thinks I did something illegal, read that and find out that it was perfectly legal. And then there's chapter 2. 22 reasons why I'm actually not the worst president ever. In fact, I'm the best ever. It's chapter 2. So I like long chapter names. I came up with myself.
Hey, what? But I will tell you this. Using those techniques save lives. My job was to protect America, and I did.
You talk about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. There's another guy you write about in the book, Abu Zubaydah.
Yeah.
Another.
Now,
let
me just say one thing. Now, this whole, see, that's a what we call counterfactual. I torture people, save lives. Do we have another attack? Except for, like, the anthrax one and the foreign, you know, all the soldiers died of. 100,000 were killed in Iraq. Aside from those, nobody died. And that's because we tortured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Did he give us any information? Maybe. I mean, when you appease the torture gods, you've protected yourself. That, and I had to wear a special mood ring I got from a Cracker Jack box. My daddy never let me eat Cracker Jacks.
Terrorist suspect. He was waterboarded. By the way, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was waterboarded, according to most reports, 183 times. This guy was waterboarded.
He was quiet the first 182.
And you explain that his understanding of Islam was that he had to resist interrogation up to a certain point. And waterboarding was the technique that allowed him to reach that threshold and fulfill his religious duty and then cooperated. And you have a quote from him, quote, "You must do this for all the brothers,"
yeah,
end quote.
And interesting.
Abu Zubaydah really went to someone and said you should waterboard all the brothers?
He didn't say that. He said you should give brothers the chance to be able to fulfill their duty. I don't recall him saying you should water. I think it's an assumption in your case.
Yeah, you must do this for all the brothers. Oh, so to let them get to that threshold.
Yeah, that's how I interpreted it. Look. First of all, we used this technique on three people.
Mm-hmm.
Captured a lot of people and used it on three. We gained valuable information to protect the country, and it was the right thing to do, as far as I'm concerned.
So if it's legal,
pause for a second. You know what the question that Matt Lauer should be asking is? What information? I can't tell you. Even though that happened 8 years ago, if they knew what we knew then, see, they don't know that we stopped those attacks. See, they didn't, we stopped the attacks 8 or 9 years ago, after we waterboarded them. And I cannot tell you what attacks we stopped or how they, the information we got that helped us to stop them. Because if I was to do that, Al-Qaeda would know that those attacks did not take place. In the, I'm going to you should give me these questions in advance. I'm going to Matt, I got to say stuff for the second book. So, next question that you didn't ask, Matt Lauer. The most obvious question. That's the key.
If American is taken into custody in a foreign country, not necessarily a uniformed American.
Look, I'm not going to debate the issue, Matt.
I'm just asking, would it be okay for a foreign country to waterboard an American citizen?
All I ask is that people read the book. And if they can reach the same conclusion, if they'd have made the same decision I made or not.
You'd make the same decision again today.
Yeah, I would. Let's talk about.
I don't want to just buy the book. Let me just say this: my father's book did a certain amount of sales, and after so many years. When we all go home for Thanksgiving, it's still Jeb who gets the nice room. And George just gets the one in the basement. And, I just buy the book. Next question. No more debatey stuff. Jetpack, engage! What happened to that video, Dorsey? Where's that goddamn video?
I had to sleep for a couple of
days. Jesus Christ. We had this was the day. This was America's day to put on the Jetpack video on Sam Cedar's site. Maybe, is it not sitting on your computer? Didn't you steal stuff from Air America? Shouldn't this be on some server somewhere?
I think it's still on YouTube, for sure.
Yeah, I suppose we could steal it from YouTube. Let's do it. Maybe we'll record one after. We'll put it up. And you got to do it today, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's George Bush. I don't even want to talk about him anymore. It makes me sick, that dude. But what really makes me sick is the fact that there is no media force, no one in our media, short of a couple of people on MSNBC, who will hold this guy to account. It really is just, a perfect example of how ill our society is. And speaking of that, you know, I don't want to make this show the crap on Lawrence O'Donnell show because I've gone through all this trouble to make the logo for the Majority Report. And the crap on Lawrence O'Donnell show, I don't know. I would imagine that URL is available. So, but I don't have a problem with the show. The show's actually not bad. But, you know, I'm getting, you know, every day there's another example of how this guy is really, you know, despite what his politics are, again, he considers himself a democratic socialist in the European mold, as he said to me on multiple occasions. But he's really got an attitude about... he's got an attitude of, I think, a little bit about bloggers. And I think that's because of his sort of establishmentarian roots. You know, he worked in the Senate for Moynihan. I'm not sure if you knew that.
Nope.
Oh, no, yeah, he did.
I watched The West Wing, dude.
Oh, you watched The West Wing?
Yeah.
What? Oh, was he in it? No, he was the executive producer.
He was in a couple episodes.
Oh, he was?
He was Jeb's dad, or not Jeb.
We're going to have to, I think, run a mic to your desk. But yeah, no, it's almost, you can't go through a show without him telling you that, but that's fine. And good. That's a legitimate credential. Last night he ended a show, apparently, with these words. Tomorrow night I'll rejoin. You know, he had an argument with Glenn Greenwald because Lawrence's narrative of this election, which is completely not supported by any data, was that guys like Feingold lost because they were too liberal. And Greenwald got into it with him on Morning Joe, I guess it was. And so O'Donnell, to his credit, you know, he invites these people back. He likes to mix it up. And that's one of the things I like about him. Tomorrow night, I'll also rejoin For Real political blogger Glenn Greenwald. He'll explain why living in Brazil gives him a better perspective on the midterm elections than those of us who are stuck living somewhere in the 50 United States. And he'll tell you why he really hates me. Now, Glenn Greenwald lives in Brazil. Now, first off, Evan, let's get your opinion. Since Evan doesn't even have a TV, he's not as... What does that sound like to you?
Not having a TV?
No. This quote.
That sounds ridiculous to me. But it sounds like he's trying to pick a fight.
Right, because Lawrence has a much better pulse of things because there's no such thing as the internet or the phone or newspapers in Brazil. By being in a studio in New York City or in Los Angeles, you have a much better sense of America than you would if you're in Brazil following the same media. I mean, let's face it. We could be doing this show embedded 3 miles into the ground right now. And as long as we still had internet, it wouldn't make a darn difference. So that Brazil thing is just sort of like a way of saying somehow he's just trying to discredit him off the bat for a completely baseless reason. Now, other people will read in more into that and that it wants to make it sound nefarious. It's not just a question of him. It's not just the same calculus that Sarah Palin, like, we're real Americans. Because we live in the heartland or in Alaska. Right? I mean, it's that same calculation. It's a sack of shit. You know, I lived upstate for a couple of years. It's 34 farms. I know for a fact that I have used a chainsaw and an axe and a maul more recently than Lawrence O'Donnell, if he ever has. Right? Am I more American than Lawrence? Maybe more manly. Maybe significantly more manly, but not necessarily more American. Greenwald lives in Brazil because his boyfriend, I don't know if he has trouble getting into this country, but he can't be married up here. So he's down there. But whatever. It doesn't matter why he lives there. So I don't know. That's going to be good TV to watch tonight if you're interested. So, Evan, you may want to go rent a TV. I was on Oberman's show last night talking about... with that other guy. I don't even know the guy's name. Thomas? Is that his first name or his last name? Thomas? Okay, yeah. I was on Olbermann's show with Tom last night. He was perfectly fine, I guess. I don't know. You know, you can't even see him because I'm talking into a camera. And he looks like a guy who would work on CNN. You know what I mean? Like one of those guys they just sort of just pull out of the factory, form a football player or something,
yeah,
right?
I was going to say, he looks like an old football player who probably couldn't make it on ESPN.
Yeah, he looks like he was college football, though. Yeah. Not. I mean, he's not big enough to be pro. He was probably like a linebacker. Why are we even having this conversation? It's weird. And so, and I was talking about how the question was healthcare repeal. Now, I think I said this yesterday. The only thing that's like remotely comforting about how much we have been snowed in many respects by the Democrats is the only thing that is mitigating is that the Republicans, the Tea Partiers, You're about to realize, well, I don't know about that, but the rest of us are about to realize just how played, how big a patsies you guys were. Now, it was clear from the beginning that the Tea Party people were patsies because they're being funded by the same people they're railing against. The Chamber of Commerce, who basically made TARP pass, was funding Tea Party candidates. The Koch brothers. The financial industries. All of these were funding the Tea Party rallies and the Tea Party candidates. And they're going in on, Rand Paul was on some Sunday show this weekend. Are you going to vote against the debt? The debt's raised. Yes, I am. I am. Because we need to send a message. Well, but if you don't raise the debt ceiling, this country is going to default. Well, it doesn't mean that it's actually not going to be raised. I'm going to vote against it, but other people are going to vote for it. So, well, wait a second. Why? I need to send a message. Well, that seems ridiculous. Well, people have sent this message in the past. He said people have voted against raising the debt ceiling in the past. So somehow, now that he's doing it, now that a guy with a toupee or a father who's a famous congressman is going to vote against it, that's going to send the message. Before, when all those Republicans voted against it before, that didn't send a message. When he does it, it's going to send a message because he's a dentist. So, exhibit number one of the Tea Party candidates immediately screwing over the people who voted for them. Come on, get some balls. Filibuster it. Put a hold on that vote. There's many ways a guy in the Senate can screw up that debt ceiling. Do it. Do it. Bring the default, Rand Paul. You'll be famous. Won't happen. And then we have this repeal of health care. I got news for you. There's not going to be any repeal of health care. It's not going to work in legal challenges. The mandate is not going to be challenged legally because the mandate is actually just a tax. It's going to be a new tax. They're going to call it whatever tax. And you will be able to, if you purchase health insurance, you'll be able to deduct that and you won't have to pay that tax. If you don't purchase health insurance, you'll have to pay that tax. Which, and frankly, the mandate, I think, is very bad policy when you're still forcing a private industry. But creating that dynamic, if you're interested in a single-payer system like I am in the long term, is not necessarily a bad thing. The politics of it are all screwed up. Maintaining less of a foothold in that arena where you could have a public option, which would have served very few people. But it would have cracked the door open to head down that road. We're going down that road. It's going to happen. It's inevitable. It's just a question of how much money we're going to burn before then, I think. But so you have these Republicans who we're talking about. We're going to come in. We're going to cut taxes for everybody, and we're going to lower the deficit. Well, exhibit two: when you cut taxes, obviously you increase the deficit. But here's my favorite. Okay, here's Jim DeMint, the political leader, the elected leader of the Tea Partiers. Here he is on what program was he on?
David Gregory.
Yeah, Meet the Press. And they have no answer for how they're going to cut the budget, right? Now, understand that everybody talks about Paul Ryan's plan. And Pat Garofalo at the Wonk Room, and yes, if that name sounds familiar, cousins.
Huh.
True. Very good guy, Pat. Young guy, smart. Smart as a whip. And, listen to Jim DeMint. Now, remember, now Jim DeMint, what he wants to do is to repeal parts of health care. He wants to repeal the part that squeezes Medicare. They've cut out what is considered waste in Medicare. it narrows Medicare in some ways. That's why there was such a problem with the seniors in this election. And but, of course, you have a Republican talking about expanding Medicare, which would, of course, increase the deficit. So they want to expand Medicare in the health care proposal. And then with that said, play this clip.
Which part of the budget, knowing that there's only 15% that's non-discretionary, or that's real non-defense discretionary part of the budget, what are you going to target for cuts?
Well, I don't think the American people are going to have to sacrifice as much as the government bureaucrats who get paid about twice what the American worker does.
What?
First
Pause
of all,
that.
We just need...
What? What? We're not going to have to cut anything out of the budget except for we're just going to pay the government workers less. And they get twice of what the American... Don't you see you have to hate the government bureaucrat? People have done study upon studies. Even if you include the pensions, the bottom line is that government pay is on par with that of the private sector based upon education.
Worker does. First of all, we just need to return to pre-Obama levels of spending in 2008. We need to cut earmarks so people will quit focusing on taking home the bacon.
Pause it. Okay, so the earmarks thing, that's going to be hilarious when Mitch McConnell squeezes that, you know, eliminates that. Good luck with getting rid of those earmarks. Even Captain Earmark himself, John McCain, loves the earmarks.
We need to defund Obamacare, and then we need to look at the entitlement programs, such as the way Paul Ryan has done in the House with his roadmap to America's future, to fix our tax code, to fix Social Security and Medicare, and to cut the cost over time. We've got the plans, David, to do this. We need to talk about them. We need to help the American people see where we're going.
But let me just stop you. I'm going to be very, very, very specific, because going back to 2008 spending levels will not get anywhere close to balancing the budget. So you're saying that everything has to be on the table. Cuts in defense, cuts in Medicare, cuts in Social Security. Is that right?
Well, no, we're not talking about cuts in Social Security.
Why not? That's socialism. Now, of course, they are talking about cuts in Social Security. They're just going to raise the age.
And just cut the administrative waste. Huh. We can cut hundreds of billions of dollars a year at the federal level. So before we start cutting, I mean, we need to keep our promises to seniors, David, and cutting benefits to seniors is not on the table.
But where do you make the cuts? I mean, if you're protecting everything for the most potent political groups like seniors who go out and vote, where are you really going to balance the budget?
Well, look at Paul Ryan's roadmap to the future. We see a clear path to moving back to a balanced budget over time. Again, the plans are on the table. We don't have to cut benefits for seniors, and we don't need to cut Medicare.
That's right. We could have it all. Let's just follow Paul Ryan's roadmap to the future. As Pat Garofalo points out, DeMint is either ignorant as to what the roadmap actually says, or he's willing to totally mislead his audience. I'm going to vote for both. I think there's a tremendous amount of ignorance, but I also think there's also a tremendous amount of willingness to mislead his audience. I'm going to just have to go with both. When you hear a politician about cutting spending by getting rid of waste, they're not serious about cutting spending. Now, I don't necessarily have a problem with someone who's not serious about cutting spending. Although I would love to see one quarter. I mean, I think we could cut one quarter of our military budget and not even bat an eye. We could probably cut three quarters of our military budget. And then we'd only be able to kick the world's ass one time over. So Paul Ryan's roadmap to the future.
Barack Obama.
Oh, wait, that's not
Barack
it.
Barack Obama.
Involves severe cuts to Medicare and Social Security. Ryan's plan would eliminate Medicare and Medicaid as we know them and just replace it with a voucher system. It would also get rid of SCHIP. And it would basically just be vouchers to means-tested vouchers to poor people, which means that when you're 55, if you're not poor enough, you gotta be poor. Middle class, you're just going to have to deal with health care on your own. Low-income households, I guess seniors, depending on what age that would be maybe at that time, people with disabilities, it would help them buy private insurance. And the value of vouchers would fall further behind the rising cost of health care with each passing year, right? They would purchase less health coverage over time because of that. By 2080, Medicare would be cut 76% below its projected size under current policies. So Medicare would be 78% less in terms of buying power, and God knows what kind of inflation we'd have on health care. I mean, so it's absurd. It's basically just saying, like, there's a way to reform Medicare and Medicaid to save money, and that is to get rid of it. Ryan also proposes large cuts in Social Security benefits, 16% for the average new retiree in 2050. Let's see. 2050, that's 40 years from now. Oh, that's for you guys.
Yep.
28% in 2080, and that's from price indexing alone. So that's just like dealing with against inflation. And some of those savings go to private accounts rather than restoring Social Security solvency. So even that money is not it goes to other administrative costs as opposed to shoring up the trust fund. And then it doesn't even balance the budget, according to Ryan's own numbers, even as it raises taxes on 90% of Americans, according to Pat Garofalo. So, in other words, his plan is...
FUBAR, America's right...
No, I guess I got to come up with a... That's bullshit on there. Right? So, the Tea Partiers are about to find out... Well, that's the other thing I had... My point last night was the Tea Parties aren't going to find out that the Republicans are full of crap. Because the Republicans are much better at making it seem like the Democrats are standing in the way of their progress. And then the Tea Parties aren't going to give a shit anyways. You know, then it'll just go back to the same group it was back in the 2008 election when it was just Ron Paulites as opposed to the Republican light or Republican dark that it is, whatever it is. Supreme Court refused to hear its first health care challenge. And apparently Elena Kagan will not be recusing herself from these things. It's unclear what things that Elena Kagan felt like she was so involved with in the development of legislation in the Bush administration as Solicitor General as to what she would have to recuse herself from. Apparently health care, not one of those things. She said during the hearings that she didn't advise the Obama administration on the legal intricacies of this anyways, so not that much of an issue. Just an interesting little tidbit. Now, moving towards our lame duck session. Reid promised prior to the election that he would bring the DREAM Act up for a vote at the end of the year. The DREAM Act would allow children of illegal immigrants to become permanent residents if they arrived in the U.S. at the age of 15 or younger, lived in the country for at least 5 years, showed good moral character, I don't know what that means, graduated from high school, served in the military, or attended college for 2 years. In other words, if these people have proven that they are not a drain on the system, that they are actually contributing to the system, that they are good individuals who are doing their best to either serve the country or create a future for themselves, and had came to this country not by their own volition, they can get permanent resident status. Now, of course, there's a huge problem with this on the right, because they will be drains on I know it's not because they want to just protect the white Anglo culture. It's because if too many people go to college, the reason why you would have a problem with this is not because these people are brown. It is because if they serve in the military, there won't be enough room for real Americans to serve in the military. Okay, no. If they show good moral character, this is the problem. There's only so much good moral character to go around. And so if these there's nothing racist about opposition to the Dream Act. It's just that if you here's the problem. If you allow for this, more people are going to bring their kids here as opposed to leaving them in Mexico. No. No, there is no problem with it. During the and theoretically that's going to happen during the lame duck session. Read. I don't know. They come back, what, the 15th, right? That's like next Monday? It's going to be interesting to see which Democratic Party shows up. I have my guesses, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I hope guys like Russ Feingold, you know, are able to push some things. Great guys who are leaving. This is interesting. During the lame duck session, you know the Disclose Act, right? This is a response to the Citizens United ruling, which basically says you can have unlimited corporate funding. The Disclose Act would make that ruling less detrimental to our democracy by forcing more disclosure as to who's giving money. And it was supposed to come up, or there was an attempt, I guess, to pass this. And in the past, it failed. But newly elected Senator Mark Kirk, Republican of Illinois, the guy who took Barack Obama's seat, is sounding like he'll support it. Now, this guy is trying to stake some territory as an independent, you know, Republican, which means that he's, you know, probably a couple of clicks to the right of Ronald Reagan at this point. But he is saying that he may vote in favor of the. And here's the thing. I guess he comes in to fill out the remainder of Obama's term. He won a special election to fill the seat that was vacated by Burris. So he comes in to fill out Obama's term, which I believe would be another 2 years, right? Obama was elected in 2004.
Yeah.
Wait a second. So would he just fill out the next couple of months? I don't understand. That's weird. We got to look into that. But be that as it may, he's going to be in during the lame duck session as opposed to Burris for some reason, because I guess he was just filling. It was the first election. You know, things got a little messed up in Illinois, apparently, after Obama left. And he may vote for the Disclose bill. We'll see about that. He'd have more support in the Senate lame duck from other Republicans fed up with the aggressive. This is the theory anyways, that he might have support from people like Murkowski and guys like, you know, guys who lost to Tea Party candidates. The guy from Colorado, because there was a lot of these outside groups. So it's possible the Disclose Act could pass. That would be actually great. Don't hold your breath, but Don't Ask, Don't Tell is an effing mess. Robert Gates has called on the Senate to pass legislation repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the lame duck session. Our Secretary of Defense. However, the Pentagon says they're not going to release their report. You know, the I don't even know what that report is supposed to say. Their report until before December 1. And, of course, the Senate is talking about leaving before December 1. So there's no word yet as to whether or not that report is going to be sped up. But Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal was embedded in the defense appropriations legislation. And my understanding is that Carl Levin has signaled that he's going to take it out because the Republicans have threatened to filibuster the appropriations bill. Now, Matt Iglesias makes a good point. There's overwhelming support for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell amongst the population. Nationally, adults, 70%.
Wow.
Republicans, 60%. Conservatives, 53%. Democrats must be close to 100%. I mean, liberals are at 82%. Moderates at 85%.
That's weird.
That goes to show you that. Look at that. 82%. Well, that's got to be a margin of error thing, because in May 2009, 86% of liberals were...
that's also part of what, what's his name, Green was talking about when we ran his clip last week.
That
identifying as a liberal is getting rarer and rarer.
And it has nothing to do with your stance on positions.
Yeah, yeah.
It just has to be if you want to be the guy who gets punched at, you know... independents, 74%. Democrats, 76%. I mean, there's absolutely, you know, and Iglesias gives credit to the Republicans. I mean, but I would also argue that it takes Democrats as your foes in this battle. They're going to filibuster the defense appropriations bill, which you would think would have some type of political cost to it, to prevent the implementation of or the repeal of a policy that 70% of the American public wants repealed. And still the Democrats can't work with that. I mean, honestly, what the frick? You got to be kidding me. It's ridiculous. And get ready, you know, remember that August 2009 with all the Tea Partiers coming out and threatening legislators and having those horrible rallies and whatnot? It's on the way. FreedomWorks has launched a no lame duck vertical on its website, apparently, whatever that means. They're gearing up to have protests. Gingrich's American Solutions for Winning the Future. Jesus. Is petitioning congressional members not to get involved in the lame duck session. The American Policy Center has started a nationwide protest against lame duck session. The Traditional Values Coalition's getting into it. Karl Rove's American Action Network. This wingnut welfare, man. Do you realize that if we were doing a conservative show right now, this place would be three times the size?
Yeah.
And we'd be getting paid. Center on Budget and Policy Priorities talks about unemployment, federal unemployment insurance program that subsidizes state unemployment insurance will be running out November 30th. If it is not re-upped, it would be the first time that Congress wouldn't have a program like this during a major recessionary period. You know, after 26 weeks, it's harder and harder to find a job. And it's harder and harder these days, and it's also harder and harder for people who are, like I said, in their 40s and their 50s. And people are going to get screwed. Looking past the lame duck session, when, now I guess the... I guess actually it's going to have to be in the lame duck session that they deal with the expiration of the Bush tax cuts. And I guess two House Democrats have floated this compromise. In my estimation, any compromise that does not allow for temporary extension of millionaires' tax cuts has value. Because 2 years down the road, this extension for the tax cuts for the rich, you know it's going to be locked in. It's going to be permanent. Their proposal is to extend tax cuts for those who earn up to $500,000 as opposed to $250,000. So the plan would include a five-year extension for those who earn less than $250,000 and a one-year extension for those who make up to $500,000. They both must have a bunch of people who make $400,000 a year in their district. But I got no problem with that plan just based upon the political weakness of the Democrats. Also looking forward to the post-lame duck session. Remember how horrible and corrupt the Obama administration is, that they proposed to SESTAC that they may have offered him a job in the administration as a way of enticing him not to run against Arlen Specter. You remember this? Mm-hmm. How this is the first time in politics ever that someone's been offered a job as a way of keeping them from competing in a political arena that the person offering them a job didn't want them to do. Like, that never, ever has happened before. Never. Never, ever, ever. And as soon as the Republicans take control of the House, they're going to look into this. They're going to pinpoint the source of this cancerous scandal. And, I'm sorry. Oh, no. Okay. Sorry. My mistake. Daryl Issa has now said that his committee has no intention of issuing subpoenas for Clinton, SESTAC, or anyone else involved in that. He said this isn't isolated to the Obama administration. It goes back to every one since Andrew Jackson. If you're going to go down that road, you have to go back to every administration. I mean, that's despite the fact that in May, Issa had sent out a campaign email saying that Clinton's job offer could amount to 3 felony charges of bribery and corruption. But, you know, but at the same time, secondhand, wait a second. No, yeah. Sorry. That, you know, like you write an email and you're like, and then you're like, and you draft it and you look at it and you're like, oh, I don't know, this may not be right. I'm going to check it later and I'm going to, I just sent it to thousands of people in my district to raise money. Ah, God darn it. God. Keep thinking I got to get that email retrieval. So, this may be the way business is done in Chicago, Issa said at the time, but it's not the way things done in our nation's capital. And I'm intent on getting to the bottom of this if it means... Oh, wait. No, I'm not going to cancel that. Not going to do it. And Digby made the point on her blog, digsbyblog.blogspot.com. It may have something to do with... the Republicans openly bribing Joe Manchin to switch parties, right? We will give you a chairman of, what is it, the Energy Committee or whatever they're offering him, and a car, and all the perks that come with that if you switch. Because we would never do to offer somebody a job. No, we're offering you junkets. We're offering you energy industry money. We like your style. We like the way you shoot legislation. That was one of the things down at the Glenn Beck 828 rally. There should be a law that you cannot have legislation that is over 100 pages long. And I said, so you'd have to make that law. Now that law would also have to be less than 100 pages, or could you grandfather that in? Just like the dumbest. Why not? Why 100? There should be no law that it's more than 2 pages long. Period. And then, of course, people are going to get around that because they're going to increase the margins, right? We all know. Everybody here went to school.
I start legislating font size.
Yeah, exactly. This is a little depressing. Jim Webb may or may not run for re-election. He's going to have a very tough election. And he was interviewed in by Real Clear Politics. And, you know, when we had Jim Webb, was one of our original fighting Dems back at the time. There are some things about Jim Webb I'm not thrilled with. But the thing that really resonated with me about Jim Webb was his populist economic positions. And it's depressing, this interview. You know, he pushed for a one-time windfall profit tax on Wall Street Records bonuses, right? More symbolic than anything else, but an important symbolic gesture. He says, I couldn't even get a vote. And it wasn't because of the Republicans. I mean, they obviously weren't going to vote for it. Republicans weren't. But I got so much froth from Democrats saying that any vote like that was going to screw up fundraising. People look up and say, what's the difference between these two parties? Neither of them is really going to take on Wall Street. If they don't have the guts to take them on and they've got all these other programs that exclude me, well, to hell with them. I'm going to vote for the other people who can at least satisfy me on other issues like abortion. Screw you guys. I understand that mindset. And he's right.
Yeah.
It's the, to a certain extent, it's the what's the matter with Kansas argument. If the Democrats do not come in and fulfill their role as the party of the people, they offer nothing. And, you know, the depressing thing about this period, as opposed to 2004, for me personally, was that the Democrats just simply were not aggressive. And I think it was Obama, largely. I mean, I actually am a fan of Nancy Pelosi's. And I think that she did what she could without the backing of the president. President was just not aggressive enough. And Harry Reid, not terribly aggressive either, frankly, in my estimation. But if the Democrats do not make a clear distinction, they cannot be, you know, I think they're just so infected now with this corporate money and this financial services money. I don't know how, you know, you can get back to that. I hope you can. I don't know what it's going to take. You see people like Russ Feingold. And I didn't agree with Russ Feingold on everything by any stretch of the imagination. But you see people like that voted out. And you wonder what it's going to take to get populist Democrats in office. I mean, that's what this whole Steny Hoyer and Clyburn fight is about in some respects. Neither one of them is particularly progressive. And because Nancy Pelosi is running again for Democratic leader, I guess it'll be minority leader at this point, it's creating a little bit of a battle for minority whip. Clyburn has been majority whip. Steny Hoyer had a position majority leader. Nancy Pelosi was Speaker of the House. Well, she's running for majority leader, which means that Hoyer and Clyburn fight it out for whip. Steny Hoyer is a serious establishmentarian, blue dogish, if not a specifically blue dog Democrat. Very corporatist. From Delaware, for God's sakes. Clyburn is sort of a conservative-ish Southern Democrat. Social Security and this and that. Neither one of them is terribly progressive. My understanding is that there's support for Steny Hoyer because he has been the go-to, most aggressive, most willing guy in Congress to go and help freshmen get reelected, outside candidates get elected, that whether you were progressive or you were a blue dog, he would come and visit. He would provide you credibility in local press's eyes. He would help you with fundraising. He would travel constantly. Very helpful to electing Democrats. Progressives, it didn't matter. And this is why he has such support. And why, as a whip, he has such leverage. The problem is that the policies that he's most inclined probably to whip for and the ones that he's most attached to are not ones that I like as a progressive. Clyburn also has his own credibility. He's been in there for a long time. He's, you know, but the same issue. He's also a guy who's willing to cut Social Security. And one of the things that there's been talk about is why don't we have a progressive who has been able to do the same thing, our version of a Steny Hoyer, a progressive who has credibility in the House, goes to district, helps people get elected to build this type of support. One of the reasons that people speculate is that generally progressives come from poorer districts. And also, if you're a genuine progressive, you're not going to take corporate money. And if you don't take that corporate money, that means that your fundraising job is that much harder. And if your fundraising job is that much harder, it means you can't afford to go and fundraise for other people. You can't afford to go and spend your time traveling to try and get Evan or Dorsey elected if I'm sitting here trying to get myself elected because I don't have the money. That's the situation. That's the, I mean, you know, it's the same. Somebody dropped $500,000 on this operation right now. Our show prep would be a little bit easier because we wouldn't be working on how we can jerry-rig these computers from 8 years ago, you know, jiggle them the right way so that the internet connection works. That's just the bottom line. We have a serious problem, and, you know, I don't know how we resolve this. I mean, I don't know if we ever can get to the point where we actually exclude corporate money from our system. I would imagine that the best we can do is some type of form of public campaign financing, which would free up people and not make money a determinant as to their ability to help other people. You know, the one person who strikes me who did this in the Senate was Al Franken. Yeah. He used his Air America platform in some respects as a... And I think, you know, at the time when he started, I think he thought, I may run for Senate, I may not. And if I don't run for Senate, I'm going to be a talk radio show host. And I think he was interested in both those things. And I think he said, what can I do that would support both of those endeavors simultaneously? And so he went on the road quite a bit in those first couple of years. And to promote Air America, to help affiliates, and to help raise money for local politicians in those areas. I think he formed a PAC and was doing this. And if I could clone Al Franken, I would do it multiple times. And then you guys would be gone. And I have Al Franken working over there and Al Franken over here. I have like three or four Al Frankens. Very bright guys. Funny. Show would be hilarious because I'd have three Al Frankens writing material. I'd probably say like, okay, you two Al Frankens. You write material. You two other guys, how are you with tech stuff? Eh. Not so good. All right, well, what are we going to do? So Glenn Greenwald writes about Jim Webb, and, you know, Jim Webb was a Republican. He was never terribly political, but he was Republican. He was Ronald Reagan's Secretary of the Navy. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes. And he's an author. Okay, I think he writes Born Identity. I mean, he didn't write the Born Identity, but I think they're like that. And he switched to the Democratic Party because of his intense opposition to the Iraq War and his perception that the GOP, because according to Glenn Greenwald, had become the party servants of Wall Street and ignoring and trampling upon the interests of working class Americans. that he is now emphatically complaining that Democrats are just as guilty of number two ought to be taken quite seriously. And I don't know what the solution is to that. I don't know what the solution is to it. I mean, look, I do know this. The solution is not to create a third party. Although, let me rephrase that. That's a long-term project that needs to start at a very, very local level. And by the time you're going to be able to have, you can have congressional candidates, I think, with like a 12-year plan. But that's a very hard thing to coordinate on a national level. I fusion vote the Working Families Party in this state. And I'm actually thinking about signing up. I mean, I will vote in a way that will always prevent a Republican from getting into office. Because I think that party is insane. They could call themselves the insane party, and it would be the same thing to me. We have a two-party system for better or worse, so I vote for the Democrats as a vehicle to further my vision of how the country should be. They're becoming increasingly a less efficient vehicle to deliver that, but they're still the only vehicle to do it. You know, the closest thing after that is like, the difference between a car that goes 30 miles an hour and a horse with three legs. I don't know. I'll work on that analogy. But I think you get the point, right, Dorsey? I see Dorsey over there like nodding.
He's nodding.
I can't tell if he's just nodding because he's like, hey, the video's working. I got the video. The video's working. And then just so we don't finish this on a bad note, if you love oil, if you love to eat oil.
And who doesn't?
If you love to eat oil. And I don't know. Maybe there's people out there who don't. Good news for you. As scientists are trying to figure out where all that oil went. Turns out that, yeah, bacteria does eat up that oil. But guess what? Something eats bacteria. And it turns out that the bacteria that consumed the oil, or at least parts of it, were in turn eating themselves by larger zooplankton. Guess what eats zooplankton?
Lots of things.
Yes. Fish.
Big whales.
Whales. I would imagine birds. And what do you think the birds do? They eat the zooplankton. They poop it out. And it just gets, it's in our food chain. Let's put it that way, folks. So if you're fish, it sort of changes the, is this fish oily? Is this an oily fish? Or a flaky fish? Actually, no. They're all oily now. Let's see. Well, we'll get to this other story tomorrow. Now what we'll do is we'll go into the I am taking portion of our show today. You can ask me anything. My IM is either Sam Cedar's show, if you have it. You can use it, or Majority FM. Oh, I'm not signed on yet. I'll sign on now. Are you asking me a question? Are you trying to IM me? Because you have that quality about you that... what is the name of that program that I use to...
Add him.
Right. Right. I don't know why that won't stay in my... I keep saying keep stay in my dock. Stay in my dock. Oh, there he goes. It says remove from dock. Oh, okay. My friend Matthew says that I caught the end of your countdown appearance last night. Josh, former producer of the Majority Report, Josh Orton, says that I look like I didn't shave. I looked unshaven. I shaved. I shaved in the morning. I'm sorry. There's no effing way I'm going to shave twice in a day. Like, just the fact that I'm shaving every... Look at... Oh, you can't see the video. But you guys are going to be shocked at the way... Like, the hygiene that I'm maintaining these days. I'm wearing a collared shirt. It's like a French blue shirt. Same... Oh, I guess I shouldn't have revealed that. Same shirt I wore last night over because I'm doing RTTV today. But I may, you know, and I got to bring a sport coat into work. Are you kidding me? I had to shave again. That's twice in a row. I'm going to have to shave tomorrow because I'm doing Parker Spitzer. And then Friday I'm doing Radigan. I'm going to have to shave every day this week except Thursday. It's killing me. It's killing me. I'm going to have to figure something out. I guess, you know, and if we do this with the video, like, I can get rid of this for the computer. I can get rid of this computer for the video, right? I haven't used this computer until this section right now. And then we could just bring it in for... All right, we're working out the details. We are going to hard launch. Can I announce this?
Go ahead, yeah. I was just going to say that, that Morella on the blog wants somebody to tell you that you looked great on air last night.
Well, thank you, Morella. I appreciate that. Thank you. It's nice that someone cares enough to say something positive. Everything was... That's the first thing I get out. I get an IM. Hey, good job shaving. What? Seriously? All right. You can IM me at Majority FM or Cedar MVS or Sam Cedar Show.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you about the hard launch.
No, right. Do another Al Franken impression, Tom 45. It's about as all I can do. If I go any further, it's not going to sound like Al Franken. Let's see. Okajik. Wow, it's been a long time. Hi, Sam. Seriously, great to hear you. Saw the other night on MSNBC, found out about Majority FM. Sweet. Didn't get an email from you announcing a new channel. I'm not going to do that yet because... we're in soft launch mode. And so, we are still working through the kinks, but you know, so far we've had less kinks than I assumed. We could have probably hard launched earlier, but I think this is going to be fine. We're going to hard launch on Tuesday of next week and we're going to have to probably have like a cavalcade of guests and, streamers. We'll have streamers here and confetti and pop. Cupcakes. Didn't get an email. Did you send one to everyone on your list? No, I didn't. Maybe that would be a good marketing idea. Well, you know, if it weren't for the fact that I'm so bad at that, I would be insulted by that. But I appreciate that. Totally agree with you regarding the Republicans and Dems. Dems equal car that goes 30 miles an hour versus a skateboard third party. That's a good one. By the way, I went vegan a month ago. Hopefully that food chain thing will be minimized for me. Yeah, good luck with that. Pluger, hope number one, Republicans won older voters in 2010 election by fear-mongering that health care reform would cut into their Medicare. Would love to be a fly on the wall in those homes as Republicans lead the way cutting Social Security, Medicare, bennies. Well, look, you know, here's the problem, Pluger, is that I'm afraid the Democrats are going to be the midwives of this cut in Social Security. That's what scares me, both, again, from a political standpoint and from a policy standpoint. I honestly don't know what I'm going to do, and this is going to happen. This could very well happen, I should say, in the next month or two when this Cat Food Commission releases their report. The next 2 months are going to be probably the most relevant lame duck session, I would say, certainly in the past 6 years, but probably in the last 10 years. I mean, I would say, gosh, at least in the last 10 years. I don't know. I didn't follow it closely, lame duck sessions closely enough during the Clinton administration, but I imagine it had something to do with the blowjob. Hope number two, says Pluger, money in elections. If Palin enters in 2012 race, maybe Rove-guided big money anonymous attacks against her will wake up some of the Republican base to the need for campaign finance reform.
I don't think so.
Long shot, I know. Re-Social Care, Medicare cuts. Ha, exactly what I was thinking. Re-Dems midwifery. Will Dems be able to take advantage or roll over? I don't even want to guess. Didi Fru won. How about something like, hey, where is everybody? Why isn't people IMing me at Majority FM? Well, I used to get thousands of IMs. Now I just have like 10, 12 people. Didi Fru, well, I guess we haven't put it on the blog. How about something like cheery, like Jeb Bush getting a seat on Lehman board 14 days before they folded? When can we pay to subscribe? Soon. Maybe if we take to the streets like the French. Yes, maybe, but it doesn't seem to work in this country. Sugar High, I disagree with you about Democrats as a vehicle. If the left is not willing to withhold its vote, there's no pressure for the Democrats to promote our agenda. You know, I mean, this is the debate, isn't it, Sugar High? I mean, that is really the question. What is the leverage the left has? At the same time, you know, there is an experiment. We can point to an experiment where that is the case, and it brought us 8 years of Bush. Now, maybe 9/11 doesn't happen, and Bush is a one-term president. I don't know. I mean, I know that in like September 13th or 14th of 2001 was scheduled to be a Newsweek cover of Newsweek was about the fracture on the Supreme Court over their decision to install Bush. Who knows? Who knows? I don't think the Democrats are a single entity. You know, we talk about them in that fashion because it's simpler to do so. But it's almost like I have this conversation with people all the time when they ask me about pitching television shows, because I've had some experience pitching television, not much experience getting them successfully onto television, but selling them to networks. I've sold probably a dozen more, maybe. And people always want to say, like, hey, this would be great because it's going to appeal to X, Y, and Z demographic. And if this network, which they claim with their advertising, wants to really promote it, it's the most rational decision. And it's like, no, you think that when you go in and talk to these four or five development executives or entertainment executives, and I'm telling the story because I think this is analogous to a lot of things. You think that their number one agenda is how can I fulfill the mission of the company, as opposed to how can I keep myself from A, getting fired, and then B, taking responsibility for a mistake, and then C, how can I get myself to get a raise? Though that's what they're thinking. Fulfilling the mission of the company is probably somewhere after like, what am I going to have for lunch today, and what am I going to have for lunch the rest of the week, and then what am I going to have for dinner, who's going to babysit tonight, you know, fulfilling the mission of the company, of the greater of the team, you know, is somewhere down to like, what color should the interior of my next car be? And I think that's the case with the Democrats. I mean, Republicans function in a different way because there's so much money to incentivize them. In every, you know, all of their private enterprises that support their legislation, so much money. Listen to right-wing talk radio. You cannot go through a commercial break without hearing an ad for Americans for Prosperity or the Heritage Foundation or all of these different right-wing think tanks that essentially just slush funds for this right-wing. And so we can't pressure Democrats as an entity, excuse me, as an entity, we can only pressure individual Democrats. And in that instance, when you start to pressure Democrats one at a time, You cannot. You need to find out where their pressure points are. And that depends on what district they're in, what state they're in, what their issues are. So I don't think that we can have a blanket. I'm not going to vote for a Democrat because I want them to know that I'm holding their vote because I'm a leftist. That's not going to work. And particularly when we have a media that frames everything like in that regard as a as it's because the centrists didn't come out. I mean, what if the left had not voted for the Democrats en masse? We just would have more losses. And the narrative would be the same. Because the fact of the matter is that people who did vote because healthcare was the number one reason for voting, the majority of them either were happy or wanted the bill to go further. But that's barely being reported. And it's certainly not into the... I agree in part with that dynamic that we need to leverage our votes in some respect, but I don't... You know, there's also something called overplaying your hand. And if you do not have the ability to leverage your votes, you need to figure out something else. And in some instances, that could be just wait. Lobos, hey, Sam, do you think if we all had the option of second choice voting, that third parties would be more viable? Yeah, I'm not sure how that works exactly. But I think the way I think fusion voting makes third parties more viable. But even still, the Working Family Party is having a tough time in New York. And they've had to concede a lot of things to the Democrats to carry them on their ballot. I mean, it's a tough road to hoe. Nefert's going to miss the hard launch. She has friends in from UK. Kevin Semicolon, did you address Barbara Bush's fetus in a jar? A what? Barbara Bush has saved the fetus in a jar? What? No.
Yeah, during the Lauer thing last night, he talked about how Barbara Bush showed him her miscarriage fetus as if it was like his brother or something like that. And it affected him, obviously.
It affected him? How old was he, 5?
I forget how old he was. Maybe like... From 5 to 12.
Yeah. Like not a teenager.
But the weird thing is that Prescott Bush and George Bush, huge Planned Parenthood. Now, with that said, do you know why Prescott Bush was so big on Planned Parenthood?
Eugenics.
He wanted to get rid of black people. He felt that black people and poor people were having too many kids, and that Planned Parenthood was about black people. And so
disgusting,
you know, Barbara was
disgusting.
Like, I just wanted to show you, George, that your brother was white. I mean, he looks pink here. He was white. Wow. We would never, you know, that's just insane. Show a kid a fetus like that. I'm still recovering from the pig's fetus I saw in AP Biology. That thing was horrible. My mother showed me my brother, the brother I loved, in a jar. I said, why couldn't you? I just held that jar and I said, why couldn't it be you instead of Jeb? Jeb, you should have been in that jar. Not the one that daddy loves more. Should have been you, Jeb. Jar boy. Good luck trying to be president with that Hispanic wife of yours. Good luck. See, Daddy. George, you should have been in that jar. Todd Slater. Hey, Sam, I'm just here. I just don't have anything interesting to contribute. thanks for a great show. By the way, was that my file you ended up using for the replay of Majority Report 1? It was, in fact, Todd. Thank you very much for that. Mine won't work. I gotta track that stuff down. Will you put that on a master list of things to do? Track down archives of the Majority Report? The Merstip. Great show. I hope you'll eventually have live chat to accompany the show like you had on Marin v. Cedar. What's this? What does that mean?
I think they mean amongst themselves. Listeners.
Oh, a chat. Oh, yeah. A chat. Mm.
That might happen with Ustream, right?
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know if we're going to use that, though. Okay. Maybe. Instructions on, you could have instructions on Majority FM to sign up and start IMing because it's a little obscure for new listeners to know how to IM me. They don't know how to IM. All right. Let's see. Tom, what do you think about the Tea Party now turning on and targeting their former best friend forever, Scott Brown? I love it. I think it's fantastic. Scott Brown made his choice. He wanted to be senator, and so you'd have to say goodbye to the Tea Party. Okjik, if you don't vote and communicate your reps, you don't get it done. Look at Gillibrand being one of the first to four to sign the letter to read in support of public option. She was supposed to be a blue dog. I called an email. Right. Well, she was actually from, she used to be my congresswoman up at New York 20th. You know, she was responding to how she perceived the district. And she was right. Scott Murphy just lost there. Now, of course, Scott Murphy was a corporatist. Scott Murphy suffered from what the issue Jim Webb had, which was Scott Murphy came in. He's a corporatist blue dog up there. You know, it's one thing to be conservative on social values in a district like that. But, you know, Jim Webb is that type of guy. Conservative on social values, maybe a little bit. Where, frankly, I think we can afford it in a district like that. But economic populist. I mean, I think New York 20 would be a great test ground for that. Because you could go up there, be relatively conservative on social values. Obviously, you got to be very... You know, you got to have your NRA sticker there. We have people shooting deer all over the place. And I have to say that, you know, my perspective on hunting, at the very least, has changed, you know, in the years that I've lived up there. Because I want first of all, I got about half a dozen raccoon that I'm seriously thinking about taking out with a 22. Because they're eating my cat food. And those fuckers are tough, man. They are hard to deal with. You can't. They're smart. Raccoons are smart. Okay. That's the thing. One thing I'm afraid, if I get a 22 to shoot those things, that they will find the gun. They have opposable thumbs. Yeah. They could shoot me. But there are a lot of deer. I would actually consider deer hunting. But most of the people I know around there who hunt deer, they eat it for the whole year. I mean, that's a big part of... They put it in their freezer, and that saves them... Literally hundreds of dollars a year in food. Or be that as it may, I also think there are people hurting up economically up there in a bad, bad way. And to hear somebody talk about and be able to relate to their problems in that way would be helpful. Just withholding a vote doesn't communicate, right? There must be active pressure, right? Pluger. LODVGG, Lawrence O'Donnell versus Glenn Greenwald. Melissa Harris Perry, former Lacewell, was on The Last Word last night and made exactly the same point as Glenn Greenwald, but Lawrence didn't push back against her at all. Seems to underscore your point that O'Donnell has a bias against bloggers. You know, I don't know he has a bias against bloggers per se, but he just, you know, look, here's the thing about Glenn Greenwald. Glenn Greenwald, you cannot intimidate him. He does not give a crap about impressing anyone. You know, there have been decisions in the past that I have made, probably not as many as I should have, frankly, that are influenced by the fact that, like, I need to keep this job. I need to... There's a couple of times I probably should have had that more in the forefront of my mind in dealing with people, frankly. But be that as it may, that's one of the things I love about what we're doing here is that, why am I giving the finger to the camera? There's nobody watching except for Dorsey. We're just testing out the video camera. I'm actually like giving the finger to the camera, but nobody can see it. Is that if, like I got to go on these shows, Parker and Spitzer, Olbermann and Radigan and RTTV. Sometimes I like to do it. Sometimes I don't like to do it. Sometimes the topics I feel like I have something to offer. Other times I'm doing it because I want to keep going back. But the number one impetus to doing these shows, particularly, you know, this week, I'm going to do four shows. They want me to do Jansen and Company, too, in the morning. And I just, I can't, we're trying to set up this thing. It involves not just, you know, all the things that are difficult about doing a daily show, but also, hey, we got to jiggle this computer to see if it works. We got to figure out, we got to run to Radio Shack to get this wire. Like, hey, you know, Dorsey, give me your gum for a second so I can rig this thing. You know, we got to do all that crap this week, and it's just – it's difficult because I want there to be a product that people can listen to. But if I didn't feel like we need to drive listeners here ultimately, I wouldn't go on those shows. I hate the shave. I would much rather, you know, do a show like this that was – successful, enable something that I can live off of. And it's going to be a while before I can live off this show. My hope is sooner rather than later. But I love the fact that I can do whatever I want and nobody can fire me. It's also a little bit terrifying because I think I was about to hold up my one of the Majority Report mugs up into the camera. I think that my lack of business acumen has been well documented. Or if not documented, at least manifested in the boxes of Majority Report mugs that I have brought into this office. All going to be, they're actually now what we call collector's items. And they'll be available for premium subscribers. Let me take one or two more questions. The fetus jar was going around Twitter last night. I think maybe someone confused it with man on dog. It's really freaking good to be able to hear you, Duty Fru. I'm happy they hunt deer, fewer to jump out at me. Yeah, it's true. I mean, we got so much deer. What are you doing? You're putting it on?
Yeah, while we're doing this.
Huh. Maybe we should take a picture and put it on the blog of Evan wearing a Majority Report's trucker's hat. Well, that's one more that we cannot sell now, Evan. We don't have many left of those. Those are going to be like, you're going to have to give a lot of, wow. Dude, take a picture of that. Can you take a picture of that and put it on the blog? Huh? Hold on, I'll take a picture of that. Oh, which reminds me, you know what we need to do? Just hold on. I'm taking a picture here. This is the after show, folks, so we can be a little bit loose. Were you ever a print model, Evan? Because you certainly know how to pose. Like, you're really posing with that thing.
No, that's never been.
Hopefully, this hopefully it keeps them from shooting people in the streets. Says Mike Malloy. And Mike is not IMing. Somebody quotes him. What do you think is different about Greenwald's political brand versus someone like Naomi Klein that he gets to go on MSNBC and write New York Times columns and she doesn't? Greenwald calls out O'Donnell by name, and a week later he's on the show. That's a good question. Well, Naomi Klein is much more internationally interested. Greenwald is primarily, and almost, I mean, primarily is a, he talks about foreign policy, but U.S. foreign policy. He is, first of all, Greenwald is more of a political writer and commentator. And he's also more specifically writing about American politics. Naomi Klein is much more involved internationally than Glenn Greenwald. Her issues are not just political, they're socioeconomic that span, or, you know, more international. That's what I would say. And frankly, I think that, you know, and also, you know, Greenwald does a lot of media criticism. And, you know, the media loves itself. And so when you critique the media pays attention. Both are very important figures. Greenwald is a constitutionalist, that's right. I mean, his first thing that he wrote was that, was a book on the Constitution. I can't remember what it was. Can't remember. I bet you I bet you the Majority Report was one of the first shows he was on. I would say mainstream media. I bet you one of the first ones. Hey, Sam, what do you think of if we all had the option of second choice? We already answered that question. Neffer, will you send you a picture of my lovely beverage? Ah, Neffer's drinking from a Majority Report mug right now. By the way, oh yeah, okay, let's see. All right, I think we're getting there. Cranes are flying, seconded on the chat feature. It's essential, Sam. Well, I bet you we could have a plug-in chat thing, too, that wouldn't necessarily be tied to the video.
Yeah, I'm sure we could run.
There's hundreds of apps like that, right? Hundreds. Chief counsel for the President's Oil Spill Commission said Monday that he had not found any evidence that workers on shore or on the Deepwater Horizon drill rig cut corners on safety for the sake of saving money. That's very hard to believe, Taurus E80, but maybe that was part of the $20 billion, right? I mean, he did get $20 billion out of them up front, which is pretty good, without there being any legal wrangling, without there being any downtime. And if part of that was, think of it as a down payment on the fines that we'd be giving you anyways. Now, personally, I would like to see our regulatory system work. But, you know, BP, even with that $20 billion, is still their most profitable, in a hugely profitable quarter. Un-frickin' believable. Howard, a Patriot Act. Yes. Am I still a Macintologist? You are Macintologist Abu. I can't remember how this works. All right. I'm going to say goodbye, everyone. We will see you tomorrow. And I think tomorrow we may actually have a guest. I'm not sure who it will be yet, but we will find out. And, oh, do we have any? We don't have that ending stuff, right?
Not yet.
So let's end on... since it's sad that we're leaving for the day, I'll be back with you tomorrow. Sad to say goodbye.